You have found Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggle stories and triumphant successes of business owners across the land. Past episodes of the Authentic Business Adventures program can be found in the podcast link found at drawincustomers.com. My name is James Kademan, entrepreneur, author, speaker, and helpful coach to small business owners across the country. And today, we are welcoming, who do we have here? Jason Stendelin, owner of C4 Insurance. So Jason, how are you doing today?
Great. Thanks so much for having me here.
I'm excited, Jason. Well, I guess as excited as you can be about insurance.
Yeah, it's not a super exciting topic for most people.
For two reasons. One, I want to learn how you got into the insurance world.
Yeah.
And two, just to help business owners know what they should know about insurance.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's tough. It seems like you're paying for promises that you hope they don't have to keep.
Well, it's a confusing thing that I think a lot of people put on the back burner until, you know, they either have to figure it out or it's too late.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. Nice. Yeah.
So let's start with, how long has C4 Insurance been around?
So C4 Insurance was started in 2017.
Okay.
I started in insurance in 2004, but really didn't go full blast until about 2009. So,
all right.
You know, worked with some various other agencies around the area, started on the direct writing side. So direct writers are, you know, agents that represent one carrier typically. They may have some additional resources, but basically I started with Farmers Insurance.
Okay.
And we had access to a couple other minor carriers, but your primary goal was to sell Farmers Insurance.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't really looking for a transition, but got connected with an independent agency and decided that maybe that was a good route to go based on, you know, a lot of the clients or friends and family that I was working with didn't fit Farmer's box, right?
Yeah.
And so I really had an issue with not being able to help a lot of people.
All right.
And so switching to the independent side, we represent many different carriers and we work for our clients rather than representing that one carrier. So
gotcha.
we can find the right coverages for each client, then shop around and make sure that we're getting a market competitive pricing.
All right. So I imagine every insurance carrier has their own little niche, whatever that is.
Yeah, and so that's the weird thing, right, is insurance kind of has its ebbs and flows, right? There's times that carriers are very aggressive in accumulating more new business.
Mm.
And then there's times where maybe their loss history is pretty high and then they'll try and raise rates to try and reduce the new business that's coming in, right? So, you know, working with carriers and knowing that flow and keeping an eye on things so that you're on top of what the market trends are,
mm-hmm.
and then being able to have access to various carriers that may be in those different stages allows us to keep offering market competitive pricing no matter what's kind of going on.
So all
that,
right.
And if we would have a client that maybe has a bad experience with one carrier, we can move them to another carrier and then, you know, still service them as their agent, right, or help them, right?
So, nice.
So it gives us a little more flexibility, gives the client a few more choices. And like I said, we can just kind of help educate them about maybe some coverage differences
mm-hmm.
from carrier to carrier so that they can choose what maybe is the best fit for them.
All right. So how does someone get into the insurance world?
That's a really good question, right? Because there's very few people that I've met even throughout my entire insurance career that went with the intention, I'm going to college, I'm getting into insurance, right?
Yeah, you never ask some 7-year-old what they want to be when
yeah,
they grow up.
Yeah, like,
I want to sell insurance.
Right, it's not, I guess for me it was just something, and most people that I talk to, it just kind of happens to you, right?
Yeah.
So my background, I love tearing things apart and fixing things growing up, and I went to school for electronics.
Oh, really?
Yep,
okay.
Yep, and then worked on different equipment, repairing and fixing different types of equipment for about 10 years. And basically I got to a point where I saw my managers and my higher ups and their knees were shot and their backs were shot from, you know, working on the concrete or squatting down and kneeling on the concrete. And honestly, their income really didn't impress me.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to get into something else at that point. So I switched into sales, sold real estate for a while.
Oh, really?
Yep. In the early 2000s, you know, when the market was really good back then.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed that. But my wife also owned her own business. And so we were looking at starting a family and wanted to get something a little more structured where maybe there were some benefits
mm-hmm.
involved. So then I switched more to just a 9-to-5 and did some recruiting and then did some construction sales.
Oh, wow.
Loved that, but then got let go in 08 when the market crashed.
Oh, sure.
And that's when I really went full time, you know, into insurance. So.
Gotcha. And did somebody reach out to you and say, hey, Jason, the construction stuff is going in the tank?
Well, I mean, it was kind of, the writing was on the wall, right? I mean, with the economy and what was going on, we were seeing large construction firms closing, and I was kind of low man on the totem pole at where I was at. So it was unfortunate, but it just was happening to a lot of people at
that time. Yeah.
So at that time, after I had done very well with that, I wanted to look for something with more of that residual income where maybe I didn't have to start over at zero every year. And so I looked into a few different business opportunities and decided that insurance maybe was a good fit. And that's and then I started with Farmers Insurance, and they're a captive agency or a direct writer where the agent represents pretty much that one carrier.
Yeah.
And I was there about 2 years, did pretty well with them, and then transitioned into the independent side. I wasn't looking for a different opportunity, but I got connected with an independent agency through one of my clients, met with them, and just decided that that was maybe a better fit for me. So transitioned to that, and I would, I've loved it ever since. So
nice. What does it take to be an insurance agent? I imagine you got to get certified.
Yeah, there's a there's some state licensing. It depends on what, you know, what licenses you want to obtain or what classes of insurance you want to sell. But usually there's property and casualty, and then life and health licenses. So there's four licenses typically for insurance. That you have to obtain, and that's just a state test. And then there's additional certifications or designations that you can go and get.
Okay.
Like I obtained my certified insurance counseling designation in 2015, so that's additional testing and things that are required to obtain that.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So I could see the certifications being similar to a financial planner versus a fiduciary.
Correct.
Kind of thing where financial planner doesn't necessarily have to work in the best interest of a client.
Yeah.
Where a fiduciary, I believe, is supposed to,
right? Yeah. So on the certified insurance counselor side, it helps to educate us better. They really hammer down on the policy language and going through everything page by page so that we're better equipped to explain things and help our clients understand those policies as well.
Okay.
So I feel like that was a huge help for me to more easily explain to clients what certain language may mean for them in the event of a claim.
Okay. Has insurance changed much in the past few decades?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we live in a very litigious society where everyone's pretty sue happy. And, you know, I think especially in the Midwest here, you see clients that have been with the same carrier for 20, 30, 30, 40 years, and they're running the same coverages that they did back then.
Mm-hmm.
And I think things have definitely changed. You look at the cost of vehicles, what those have done.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it's good for clients to understand, you know, not only state law, but look at things from more of a, I guess, a current perspective as to what things are costing. And, and so that's really where we try to bring a little more value to the table is educating our clients and saying, hey, you know, maybe we should consider this. You know, it may cost you a couple more bucks a month or whatever, but, you know, this is providing a lot more coverage for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always see at a, just a, as an example, at a fast food restaurant, they have 5 million things for sale.
Mm-hmm.
I don't go to fast food very often, so when I do, I'm just a confused mess. And I feel that way when I shop for insurance.
Yeah.
Because I see thousands of products that I don't necessarily know if they're good, if I need them, whatever. So what would you wish that a business owner would get? Perfect world. Because I imagine just like the cashier at a fast food place, they're like, oh my gosh, just get the number 3 with extra whatever.
Yeah.
If you just get that, you'd be happy. It's the best value, blah, 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 blah. Is there something for a typical small business that should get X for insurance, whatever that may be?
I really don't think there is that. You know,
there's not.
No, and I think that's the big misconception with insurance is it's not a one-size-fits-all kind of product, right?
Okay.
So our job is not only to educate ourselves about someone's business so that we really know and understand their business, because you're asking us to protect that business, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to know the ins and outs and ask all the questions and make sure we understand the risks that are involved with that business, right? And so, you know, if you're advising people or signing contracts, then maybe errors and omissions is needed. Or, you know, if you're a contractor, there's completed operations coverage and different things. So I think each business is different. Mm-hmm. And then again, depending on if they own a building or lease a building, those leases may require certain coverages. So I think everything is different. I think, you know, talking to an agent that's asking the right questions or making sure that they're asking the right questions so that we can work together to ensure the business properly is key, right?
Okay. Let's start with a crazy tiny small business.
Yep.
Service based.
Okay.
So they're not going to people's houses. They're not yep. selling a product or anything like that.
Yep.
So something like, I don't know, let's say massage therapist.
Yeah, salon. Like my wife owns a salon.
Sure.
I do a lot of salons, right?
Sure.
So typically for them, they're going to have barbers, beauticians liability, right? Professional liability. They're going to have some sort of general liability.
Okay, let's pause with the first one.
Yep.
Is that if they accidentally cut someone's ear?
Yep.
Kind of thing?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
They go in the hospital, end up getting pneumonia and die.
Well, hopefully not.
Never
had a problem with that. But yeah, I mean, it's more of that professional related to their skills, right?
Okay.
What they're doing. General liability would be more like if they're negligent in something and then someone slips and falls on the property or there's something else on the property that they're sued for, right?
Okay.
Someone feels they were wronged
mm-hmm.
or something like that, right? Libel,
okay.
slander, those kinds of situations, right? So those are the kind of the two separate liability classes for that type of risk.
Okay.
And then typically they'll have some sort of property coverage for their shears, like their scissors actually are quite expensive.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Clippers, you know, all their hair products and color and all that stuff. So we'd have some small coverage for that. You know, typically for a small salon, like a single person, you're looking at probably $500 to $600 a year.
Okay.
For something like that, maybe even a little less. So,
okay.
You know, that's, I would say, is a pretty standard small business owner's policy is probably going to be in that $500 to $700 range.
All right.
Yep.
Now, going off a little bit of a tangent here, I was
yeah.
looking at my insurance policy, and it said it did not cover terrorist attacks.
Yep.
Which I thought, oh my gosh, you could probably call just about anything a terrorist attack.
Right? Well, and so that's funny, right? And that really all started after 9/11. And
yeah.
in Madison, they suspected could be a target, right, for terrorist attacks.
Just oh, really?
Because of all the central, the UW, the government. And there was a lot of carriers that excluded terrorism straight up across the board. You couldn't even get it.
Okay.
Shortly after 9/11. And now they started offering where you can buy it or it's just included. It's very usually inexpensive
mm-hmm.
to add on to the policy, but a lot of times you can exclude it if you want to. Typically for the price, it's usually, you know, very inexpensive to add it in there, and I would advise my clients to leave it on there,
right.
just like you said, because something, I mean, it could be anything, could be considered terrorism, right?
I looked into it, and the way they, essentially a government of some kind,
right.
whether it's county or state or federal, whatever, had to claim officially that it was a terrorist thing.
Attack, yeah. But that could be foreign or domestic or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So who's to say what is a terrorist attack,
right.
especially these days, right?
Right?
So I don't know. I think it's probably a good thing to leave on there.
Sure. And similar thing was the whole act of God thing.
Yes.
Like if people are religious, isn't everything an act of God?
Well, I mean, when as far as it's related to insurance, most of that's going to be weather related, right?
Okay.
So pretty much wind, lightning, hail, you know,
sure.
that kind of stuff.
But do they break it down like that?
As far as property losses, yeah, I mean, it's...
Yeah, or wind, lightning, hail.
Yeah, so I mean, those things are always typically going to be covered as far as a property coverage.
Okay.
So I'm not sure what you're referencing as far as acts of God. As far as the terrorism, is that what you're saying?
No. Oh. Something totally separate than that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So typically property coverage, that's going to include all acts of God, right?
Okay.
So wind, lightning, hail,
gotcha.
All that good stuff, yep.
I think I saw something...
Not flooding, though.
I think I also saw something in there about a nuclear attack.
Yep.
It was not covered.
Act of war, yep.
Act of war is not
yep.
covered.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Act of war, you knew it right there.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly,
oh, yeah.
yep. So,
okay.
So that would not be covered, yep.
So do you typically see a lot of claims in the business realm, as far as service or even property?
Lately, it's been a lot.
Really?
excuse me.
Fire? Or
no, like I write insurance all over.
Yeah.
We're licensed in multiple states, and I actually have a unique product that I can write in all 48 contiguous states. But just a few weeks ago in the Fox Valley area, there was a large hailstorm that came through.
Okay.
Just had a lightning strike that totaled, took out a home up in the Appleton okay. area. And then we just had a total fire loss here on the west side of Madison.
Business?
Nope, house and two cars and the complete loss, total loss.
Wow, yep. Okay.
So doesn't happen very often, but it does happen. And that's really what insurance is designed for. It's not a maintenance program. It's for catastrophic loss, right?
So, yeah.
Yeah, so that's, you know, that's important for people to understand that, you know, carriers look at frequency of claims more seriously than one major claim, right? They'd rather see one major claim versus a bunch of small ones, right?
Gotcha. So, okay.
Yep.
So what are some things that different, as far as the business world goes, what mm-hmm. are some different things that business owners can do to reduce their exposure, which should presumably make their insurance less expensive?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing is making sure, and right now, especially with building values, right, material mm-hmm. and labor costs are really high right now, mm-hmm. making sure that things are just insured properly.
As far as replacement cost goes.
Yep, and that includes both the building or their contents, right?
Okay.
The other thing that business owners need to be aware of is co-insurance, and that's a part of almost every commercial property or policy mm-hmm. out there. And that's, if they don't understand that, they're missing a huge loophole.
Okay.
And basically, they could be in serious trouble if they're not paying attention to how that policy is written when it comes to coinsurance. And basically, the short answer is coinsurance means that the insured is responsible for insuring their building or their property to within a certain percentage of what the carrier says is the replacement cost of those items, right?
Okay.
And if they don't maintain a certain percentage of that, they can suffer a coinsurance penalty.
Oh, really?
And I've seen building coinsurance penalties of over $100,000. So, you know, people need to be very aware of coinsurance and how that may affect their business if there is a loss.
So I had a space, it was a warehouse condo, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
It was 12 buildings, each split in half.
Okay.
So 24 units.
Yep.
Lightning hit one of the buildings.
Mm-hmm.
The buildings were fairly close to each other. I think they're within 10 feet of each other, whatever. So lightning hit, started that building on fire. So that was two essentially units.
Mm-hmm.
The unit next to it had fire damage,
mm-hmm.
or heat damage, I should say. It didn't light on fire, but the siding got melted, shingles, all that jazz.
Yep.
So they ended up having, when the fire people came in there, they used water, right?
Right.
Everywhere.
Yep.
So they had four units that were affected,
mm-hmm.
plus the condo association itself.
Mm-hmm.
So they had five insurance companies, and that roof, or those two roofs, sat with a tarp over them for 6 months because the insurance companies kept pointing fingers about who was paying for what.
Yep.
Or who was supposed to pay for what.
Yeah, condos are really unique.
Is that common?
I will say that condos, especially whether it's business or personal condos, you really have to read the condo documents. And we always ask for those as the insurance agent. We always ask for those so that we can really try to understand best of how the association, what they are covering and what the tenant's responsibility is for covering, right? And so where that line is. We always try to, you know, build in some extra coverage in case we get into situations like that,
mm-hmm.
the pointing the fingers. And eventually someone needs to pay and then they're going to subrogate against someone else probably.
Okay.
But that's crazy that it sat like that for months and months.
Yeah, it was weird.
Nothing being done, right? So again, I think it's super important for agents to read those condo documents
mm-hmm.
So that we understand, okay, the condo association is covering the structure, right?
Yep.
And then the tenant maybe is covering the contents and then whatever additions they put on to the building, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever build out costs that they may have.
Yeah.
So it's really important to understand how that all is covered and
mm-hmm.
then making sure that we do the best we can to hopefully mitigate those problems, right?
Yeah.
So
it was bizarre.
Yeah, those condo ones can get very crazy.
Okay.
So
I felt luckily the items that were in, it was storage. It was junk.
Yeah.
Junk. It was
just
stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. But all I could think is I'm running my business out of this building.
Yeah.
Or out of my section. So if this would have happened to me, there would have been an interruption of business.
Yep.
Your day gets ruined. It wasn't just storage. It was activity.
And that's part of a business owner's policy typically too, is you can include that lost business income.
Okay.
And there's multiple ways to do that, but the best way is actual loss sustained, where they basically look at your records and say, all right, here's what you would have made. Mm-hmm. And they'll help offset those costs, right? Yeah. So that is another important coverage for business owners, right?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Let's talk about business vehicles.
Yes.
Because that's a whole
different realm. Yeah.
So it's probably easiest to start talking about pizza delivery.
Oh, because that's not an easy one.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's something that everybody understands. Everybody's seen it. We got two basic options, right?
Yeah.
You have where the pizza place owns the car.
Yep.
And you have where the person, the employee owns the car, slaps a magnet maybe or something on there.
Yep.
And then, so let's just start with the one where the pizza place owns the car.
Yep.
That should be fairly straightforward, I imagine.
Yeah, and the best option for people, you know, really. Okay. Yeah, best option for, you know, usually it's younger kids that are, you know, that are driving that delivery vehicle, right?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's the best option, right?
Then because it's easiest, everything's through the company owns.
Yep, it's all owned by the company. It's insured by the company.
All right.
You know, that's the most straightforward, right?
Okay. So now let's work on vehicle, even like in one of those food delivery places, right? They're everywhere.
Right.
So, you know, I'm Joe Young, let's say, and I got my little Honda Civic.
Yeah.
I'm going to slap a magnet for Joe's Pizza on there.
Yeah.
Different Joe, not related.
Right.
And
But delivering pizzas with your own personal vehicle.
Yeah,
right?
How does that work from an insurance standpoint?
So carriers ask, is this vehicle being used? Some carriers won't insure it at all. Some will, there's a surcharge, obviously, for that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, you're basically using your vehicle for business use, right?
Yeah.
And that brings up another good point, and it doesn't even have to be for pizza delivery. It doesn't have to be for anything that you would specifically say, oh, I'm slapping someone's sign on there and driving around.
Mm-hmm.
We deal with a lot of contractors that use their personal vehicle for business, and they have to be aware that you need to, you know, insure that personal vehicle properly and let the carrier know that you're using it for business use.
Okay.
Same with realtors and stuff like that. If you're using a personal vehicle for business use, the insurance carrier should know that, right? Because they are going to charge a little bit more premium.
Mm-hmm.
But if you read through the policy language, they can deny claims based on usage if they weren't properly notified, right, as to what it's being used for. Not that that's typically going to be the case. They'll probably pay the claim and then non-renew you. But in the same situation, I think it's important to properly protect yourself and your vehicle and make sure that things are covered. On top of that, I think you always, if you're using a vehicle for business use, making sure that the liability limits are sufficient is even more important.
Okay.
So
Because
you're using the vehicle more. It's not like a typical person driving to work, sitting there for 8 to 9 hours and then driving home. If you're out driving a lot more, the risk of an accident or something happening, I think, is higher.
All right.
Just because you're on the road more, right?
Got it. Okay.
So making sure that, you know, you understand state law, how those liability limits could affect you and your family's assets, right? And making sure that you're properly protected, you know, make sure that the limits are high enough on the auto policy. Do you need an umbrella policy to help protect, you know, you and your business assets, your family's assets? So making sure that you're talking with someone that's explaining that so that you understand what the risks are.
Yeah.
And then you can decide what you think is necessary, but making sure that you know before you just buy the cheapest policy you can.
All right. Let's talk about liability from a business owner's point of view when you have vehicles on the road.
Yeah.
This is decades ago. I had a job. I had a job offer for a place that was fixing chimneys or fireplaces or something like that. And this was, I was a young punk and I had a lot of speeding tickets on my record. And after they said, yeah, you're hired, all this jazz, they gave me a call the day later and they said, hey, funny story, we can't insure you.
Right.
So I'm like, oh, that's unfortunate. But I was applying other places. I ended up getting a job at a concrete place, driving a much larger 80,000-pound concrete vehicle, and there was no mention at all. Much larger company, dramatically larger company.
Yep.
Like millions of dollars more. So I didn't know if it was spread out or just the concrete truck was so slow it was a non-issue.
I mean, typically all insurance carriers are going to run drivers' records, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I just had one recently where, you know, it was a driver that had major violations that the carrier wouldn't insure, right?
Oh.
And so they either have to have a letter from the insured saying this person is not allowed to drive any vehicles and they have to agree that they're not going to let them drive vehicles. Or maybe, you know, I don't know what the situation was with the concrete truck, right? I don't know. I mean, maybe the agent didn't know. Maybe they didn't run reports. Maybe it was such a large company that they just put, you know, they just let you drive and they didn't even check. I don't know. It's hard to say without knowing all the specifics.
Right.
But I will say that I mean, as a business owner, you have to be very careful as to who you're letting drive vehicles. Do you want someone driving a 6,000, 8,000 pound vehicle or larger if it's a commercial vehicle, right?
Yeah, the concrete truck was
And now they're driving around and they kill someone, that's on your business policy, right? And you're sued for millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Your business is, you know, liable for that.
Yeah.
And so I think business owners have to, I mean, the carriers are doing the best to protect themselves, but I think as business owners, we have to do the same, protecting ourselves. If if people have a horrible driving record, there's obviously a history there for a reason, and do you want that person behind the wheel of your company vehicle?
Right. So, well, there's certainly no speeding in a concrete truck.
Well, no, maybe not.
Not even a little.
But you're not going to slow it down in a huge hurry either, so, you know.
No.
You know, so it,
very true.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think it's just all those things, right? It doesn't have to be a big vehicle to do damage, right? So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, to me, it was kind of funny. I tell this story because, the chimney place, whatever, was a van.
Yeah.
Right? The damage that I could do with a van, though, probably quite a bit, compared to a concrete truck.
Yeah, pretty minimal, like, you would think, right?
You can go through buildings with a concrete truck.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it was interesting how the place said, hey, you don't have a job because of your driver's record, just a lot of speeding tickets.
Yeah.
And the concrete place, and I assume, like, there were no DUIs or anything like that.
Yeah.
And based on the other employees that I knew at the concrete place, I would say that I was doing okay.
Right. Well, like I said, I don't think it's uncommon for an insurance carrier to say, hey, we can't insure this person.
Okay.
So I've had clients where we've had to take one vehicle out of that carrier and put it with a different carrier.
Really?
So that just that one vehicle can be driven by somebody. So
Wow. There
are creative ways that we can get around that. But
it's
not uncommon for a carrier to say, look, this driving record is, it's too bad. Like, we won't insure them.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Or maybe not so cool.
Not so cool for the business owner, especially these days when they're struggling to find people.
So this was back, so long ago. This was back when, I suppose it was a similar time to now.
Yeah.
Where, I don't even remember what was going on from an employee standpoint, but I knew this particular company was just trying to find people as fast as they could. It was a revolving door. They would turn through them.
Yep.
Probably because you're making $11 an hour driving a concrete truck.
So. Right. Well, you know, working long hours. Probably.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, it's terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible. But it was a job, whatever.
Right.
Move on with your life.
Yeah.
Tell me about other things. We got general liability. We got your typical material, scissors, whatever.
Auto.
We got your vehicle liability.
Yeah.
There's probably some other stuff on there that people aren't either aware of, or what is some other stuff that people should insure, or if there's certain businesses that they should.
Yeah. I mean, I think for anyone that's out working with, in a client's home, you know, there's voluntary property damage. You accidentally damage, you know, whatever it is, the TV or flooring, or maybe you accidentally knock something over, or you're sliding out an appliance and you rip up their floor or put a big gouge in it, right? So there's voluntary property damage. You know, maybe a window cleaner is cleaning someone's windows and they put a huge scratch in it, right? They didn't intend to do that.
Yeah.
You know, but then there's coverage for those kinds of issues. So I think, again, it's, you know, working with an agent that's asking questions and making sure that we're addressing questions that maybe the insured may have ahead of time before it's a problem, before it's too late.
All right.
So I think too many times people are just looking for a quick solution, and that's just not how we work, right? We want to make sure that we're asking all the questions up front. We can decide what's maybe a good fit and what you think you may or may not need, and then go from there, and then we'll try to work together to get a package put together that makes the most sense for each business. Most carriers are going to have specific packages set up depending on the class of business that are going to include most of those coverages that are going to be pertinent to those.
Okay.
But the other big ones these days are like data breach and cyber liability. We're seeing more and more of those types of situations where, you know, the business owner, if client's information is stolen, you're responsible for credit monitoring and notifying the clients and stuff like that.
So interesting.
Protecting that information. Or cybersecurity, right, where people's businesses are hacked into and locked down by, you know, someone and basically held ransom. So
okay.
Those are some other things that we're seeing more often these days. So I think, again, it's just talking about all these different circumstances.
And, yeah.
You know, insurance really is just transfer of risk. How much risk do you want to take yourself?
Right.
And how much do you want to pay someone else to take on?
Sure.
And I think working through that together really is the best way to
okay.
address all those questions.
You raised, or something was triggered in my mind when you were talking there, the remote worker thing.
Yep.
That probably changed the world a little bit as far as insurance goes.
Yeah, security, right?
You know, oh my gosh.
You know, that then that's the big thing, right? Is, you know, we're dealing with some sensitive information,
mm-hmm.
You know, and making sure that things are properly protected.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think the workforce as we know it is definitely changing, you know.
Yeah.
I
was looking into, so when we, whatever, year and a half ago, we were told, hey, people can't work in your office anymore.
Yeah.
I thought, okay, there's a very large chunk of control that I no longer have.
Yeah.
That I need somehow. So I was looking all over these IT boards online to try to figure out how do you set a computer up so that if an employee quits, that you can remove their access as close to a light switch as possible.
Right.
Because you don't want, if an employee were to go crazy,
yep.
you want to limit your liability, you want to limit the pain,
yep.
or the hurt, the damage that they could do to either a client or clients of clients, or who knows, right?
Right.
Like there's just a lot of information, almost so much, and we're a small company.
Yeah.
There's so much information in our little tiny company that I can imagine the companies with thousands of people remotely.
Right.
The chances of one crazy person being in there is probably pretty good.
Well, and I mean, we're seeing it more and more. And, you know, we see a lot of the large company data breaches, right, mm-hmm. are reported in the news. But it's a lot of the smaller ones that you never even hear about.
Sure. Right?
And so I think it's happening more and more often. I think, you know, as business owners, we have to be aware of that and protect mm-hmm. ourselves and protect our clients as much as we can to protect that information. But I mean, if we're all honest, all that information is pretty much out there, you know.
True.
You know.
True.
I mean, in today's internet age, and everything's online, and
yeah.
you know, most of that information is out there. It's just doing mm-hmm. the best we can to protect it from, you know, mass, you know, I guess access to a bunch of different people's
right.
information all at one time, right?
Yeah.
So
it's interesting because I'm reading through all these IT guys, and essentially what they're saying, because these are IT guys,
yeah,
it's essentially their problem.
Yeah.
And they were essentially saying, hope.
Yeah, right.
Hope you have employees that don't do this.
Right. Well, and like
there's
you said,
no
password protecting things, right?
We've
had clients where laptops are stolen out of the back of someone's car, and mm-hmm. that then now they're able to access all this client information.
Right.
You know, so having things password protected, maybe having a security system where you can remotely wipe that drive, right?
Mm-hmm.
So things like that, just trying to protect
right.
yourself, right? Depending on what information you're carrying around or what may be easily accessible, right?
Yeah, for me, like most of it's name, address, phone number kind of stuff. It's not really that big of a deal.
Yeah, so for us, it's a little different, right? We're dealing with birth dates and driver's
yeah.
license numbers and stuff like that, right?
Right?
So we don't gather social security numbers or anything, but still birth dates and driver's license numbers and
mm-hmm.
EINs and all that stuff, right? So we're dealing with some pretty important and confidential
right.
information. So.
And all I could think is, man, somebody has to have solved this, but I have yet to find.
Well, I don't think there's ever a solution that's 100%, right? You know,
right.
You know, you've got these hackers that are getting into large government
corporations,
right? I guess, right?
So right.
I think you can only do so much and do the best you can to protect it. And,
right.
And make sure you have coverage in place so that if something happens, then, and you're worried about it, that there is coverage, right?
Yeah, I guess there's, I don't like to use the word worry. I feel like that's not accomplishing, but it's a concern
yeah.
that what if,
yeah,
right? And generally speaking, as far as I know, the employees that I have aren't hackers,
right?
So I think it could be
like well, they may not, and again, they may not be, but if someone gets a hold of that computer, if they have it in the
right.
back of their
well,
car,
yeah.
you know, and that's,
yeah, that's
you
a
know,
fair point,
right? So maybe they're not, right? But if someone breaks into either their house or apartment,
right,
or they have the laptop in their back of their car and
mm-hmm.
someone steals that, right? What information is accessible from that, right?
Yeah, it's an interesting
yeah.
point.
Yeah.
I always worry about an employee going crazy.
Yeah.
Rather than somebody breaking in, because they're desktops, right?
Right. Oh, all right. So that's not like something they're carrying around. But,
no.
But
no,
yeah.
They better not be.
Right.
We did have one potential employee that told us her plan. She told us this after we almost hired her. Her plan was to live in an RV and just travel.
Oh.
And I'm like, yeah, that doesn't work.
Yeah,
for
right.
what we're doing, that doesn't work.
Probably not very secure Wi-Fi access. I
right,
yeah,
right, right. Or just
yeah.
there's your liability just goes way high.
Right, right.
On top of the fact that you couldn't really do the job well.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just the liability. Like, what's a door on an RV? You could probably kick that thing in with a with a broken leg.
Yeah, probably. It wouldn't take much to get in.
No.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So, what have you seen? I guess, what have you seen people complain about in the insurance world from the business side? Besides price, they're always
I do a lot of property insurance, and carriers are getting more and more picky about insuring older buildings. And, you know, especially in the Midwest here, we tend to have older buildings, and they get renovated and stuff. But a lot of carriers want 30 or 40 years or newer.
Okay.
Well, that's just not very common around here, you know.
Well, I suppose, especially in the metro area, especially downtown.
Oh, man, that's definitely a unique challenge, right?
Yeah.
So finding carriers that are going to be competitively priced but offer the right coverages for these older structures, that can be a struggle. I think pricing, we're starting to see the market harden a little bit, which means prices are starting to go up.
Oh, really?
Just because we've had a lot of weather claims over the last few years. So I think prices are starting to kind of tick up. So just watching that. And
all right.
I think business owners are always a little more aware of what they're paying for insurance and trying to keep those costs down.
Yeah.
I mean, workers' comp is always a huge exposure for businesses.
Right.
Unfortunately, in Wisconsin, the state controls all that. So unless
unless
you're getting a dividend or working with an agent that can get you a dividend with various carriers, that's pretty much set. So there isn't much you can do there. So.
Yeah. So let's talk about workman's comp a little bit.
Yeah.
As far as you mentioning that.
Yeah.
Does that just go in a pool?
So there are, if you're a newer business and have never had workers' comp, a lot of times the state has what they called an assigned risk pool.
Okay.
There's carriers that they choose to be a part of that, right? And if you've never had workers' comp, we may have to put you through the pool. And basically we apply and they just assign it to a carrier.
Okay.
The downside of that is you're not going to get a dividend. And there's very limited payment options. You know, if the premium's under, I think, $2,500, you have to pay the premium in full for the year. And if it's a little more than that, you may have a couple of payment options. You know, there are carriers, if you've got like your business and your auto, they'll do the workers' comp and then you can pay on it monthly, or a lot of companies offer a pay-as-you-go sort of thing with some monthly payroll reporting. You just pay the workers' comp as you go. And then hopefully we can get you a dividend if the loss history and your claims history on the workers' comp is pretty clean. A lot of times we can get you a dividend, which is basically the carrier saying, hey, we're going to give you so much of this premium back, right? And so especially for contractors or people that have very high, you know, workers' comp ratings, that can really help. You know, we're seeing where some companies will offer 30 or 40% of that premium back to to the insured, right? So that can really help a business owner. So
now if I gotta think about this, workers' comp, it's based on the type of business.
Yep.
You put in a certain level or grading or something like that?
Yeah, so basically it's all classifications set by the state, right?
Okay.
And depending on what the classification is, it's just based strictly on payroll, right? You never overpay, you never underpay. You're audited every year,
right?
So at the end of the policy term, you're going to get audited. And if you overpaid, you'll get a refund. If you underpaid, you're going to get hit with an invoice, right, for the difference.
And the classification is essentially office worker, where there's next to no risk.
Right.
And roofer, where you're
very high.
Something's happening all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
And so and especially in the contracting trades, right, the trades people, you know, a lot of times they're trying to avoid paying workers' comp, but we're seeing more now that the DWD and the DOJ are cracking down on that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so they're really trying to get these contractors to be a little bit more legit and making sure that they're following the rules. The state of Wisconsin has 9 specific guidelines that someone has to meet in order to qualify as an independent contractor.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of times if we get contractors to look at those honestly, most times they maybe are not meeting those requirements. So that's what they're starting to crack down on.
All right. You know what's interesting? Because I've looked at figuring out ways. I mean, essentially what you're trying to do, it's all a game.
Right.
You're trying to beat the game somehow.
Yeah.
And I just could not see how having independent contractors was any less expensive than having employees, because there's so, like, the different ways of liability and the taxes and all this kind of stuff. I'm like, I don't see it being any cheaper.
Well, and then as independent contractors, they have to have, maintain their own insurance, right? And are they going to, right? Mm-hmm. So there, it's just, it's difficult in certain circumstances, right, to have that trust that mm-hmm. someone's going to do things the right way.
Yeah.
So you're better off doing it your way, you know?
And it's also, I think, what do they call it, at-will states or something like that? So you can just, if you want to get rid of them, you get rid of them.
Yep.
And if they want to leave, they leave.
Yep.
So there's no benefit that way for them being employee versus independent contractor.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, the advantage, you know, technically for a business owner is that, you know, they're not an employee, so you're not paying a lot of those additional fees, workers' comp and, you know, FICA and all that other stuff, right?
But just so, the liability of that.
I agree with you. I think it's very there's very few circumstances where I think that works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, and I would think for them to be independent, true independent, at least an intelligent enough independent for me to want to hire them.
Right.
They'd want to make enough money to compensate for that because they have to pay the taxes.
Right.
So whether they realize that or not.
Right.
Yeah. Maybe that's the game.
I guess. I don't know.
So, I don't know.
It's a difficult situation, I think, for most businesses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We got audited by the state because they thought that we were, having independent contractors. And we didn't, so it was easy.
Yeah.
But, oh, my gosh, that guy, we had to supply him with desk, office with a closed door, internet. Like, there was this laundry list of stuff that we had to supply this guy.
Yep.
We had 5 employees at the time. He was there for a full day.
Wow.
And all I can think is, man, there's not that much paper to look at here.
Right, yeah.
So I can only imagine a business that's a decent-sized business.
Right.
Are they there for months? What are they doing?
Could be, yeah.
So pretty interesting. Different world.
It's definitely interesting. Like I said, it's an interesting industry, insurance, you know. And like I said, I think every business is different. You know, you could have one contractor here that does things one way and you got another contractor over here that's completely different.
Right.
And so making sure that you're just not assuming, right?
Fair.
Asking questions.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I like about it is every day is different. Every business is different.
Okay.
You know, educating myself about someone's business and then making sure we try to do it the best way we can.
Mm-hmm. So, all right.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the different carriers, not specifically, but how do you pick the carriers that you're going to have in your wheelhouse?
You know, I merged with Scott Petersburg from Petersburg Insurance in 2019, and he brought some carriers and I brought some carriers, and so we're unique as an independent agent. We have some really great carriers that not many agents have combined in one office, right? And so each carrier kind of has their unique niches and coverages, and so it just kind of depends. Like I talked earlier, there's kind of these ebbs and flows where certain carriers are more aggressive in their pricing than others, and so just kind of staying on top of those trends and knowing who's a good fit for what. You know, typically we're pricing things out with 4 to 5 carriers to see where everything comes in, and then we'll usually present 1 to 3 options depending on pricing and coverages, and then go over those differences and let the client decide.
All right.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And is it, how many carriers are there?
I mean, there's hundreds of carriers.
Hundreds.
I mean, it's crazy, right? So as an independent agent, you know, you're going to have access to a few, and the independent agent down the road may have access to a few, but, you know, you may have different carriers, right?
All right.
So everybody is maybe a little different. So
okay.
It just kind of depends. I think, you know, as with most industries, I think there's good agents and there's bad agents. I think a lot
totally.
Of, yeah, I know, and I think that rings true in most industries, right?
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like what sets us apart is we really take the time to try and help educate our clients and try to help inform them of options out there so that they can make a better decision as to what's a good fit for them.
Okay.
We're there to help them and guide them, but education really is key for us.
Okay.
You know? So,
interesting. Is there a way? I know a lot of small business owners that have multiple businesses.
Yep.
They got whatever, hobbies or marginal businesses or just starting out. Like every entrepreneur.
Yeah.
I have never met an entrepreneur that only has one idea.
Exactly.
They always have a lot going on.
Yep.
So do insurance carriers allow you to get a pool like all my businesses? insurance or something like that?
So
or?
Typically if the businesses are owned at least 50% by one person, right, or at least 50% of the ownership is the same, you could do that. But my question would be, why would you want to do that, right? So typically if you've got someone that owns multiple businesses, they're in separate entities, right, LLCs mm-hmm. or corps or whatever.
Yep.
And by combining those into one policy, now you've totally stripped away
piercing the veil,
you know, right?
All right,
so now you've combined those into one thing, and now you've completely ruined the whole idea of why you had set up separate entities to begin with.
Gotcha.
So I think you have to be cautious with that.
Okay.
You know, if they're related businesses, maybe that makes sense, but I would say for the most part that I would not recommend.
All right.
I wouldn't recommend that.
Okay. Interesting. Let's talk about the name C4. Where'd that come from? We always think of not the thing you want to insure, something with C4 involved.
Yeah, C4, so it's kind of funny. Like I said, I transitioned through a few different agencies, and I really was just frustrated with the insurance industry in general, right?
All right.
Having worked for other agencies and just seeing what was going on in the industry, I just said, I was really, it was a point in my life where I'm like, I'm either going to stick with insurance or I'm going to get out of it altogether.
Okay.
And so I said, I really want to change the way I do things and change the way people perceive this. And I said, I want to blow the industry up. And that's really where C4 came from, because it's an explosive. But really, after I thought about it a little bit more, I really wanted to, what would that really mean to me, right? And so So everyone that I work with, a lot of my clients are friends and family, and we do very little advertising. Everything comes from referrals, because the C4 stands for caring, competitive, complete coverage, right? We really care about our clients. We work with multiple carriers so that we can find a competitive price for you.
Mm-hmm.
We offer all different lines of insurance, whether it's business, personal, auto, life insurance, and then that, you know, so we kind of just bundle everything together, and it's just kind of the caring, complete, competitive, and coverage, right?
Okay.
So the four C's, right? And so that's kind of where we kind of put things together, and that's really, I don't know, that's where it kind of developed into.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
So what is the future for C4? Do you offer insurance beyond just Wisconsin?
Yeah, so we're licensed right now in 6 states directly, and then I do have a program where I work with property investors that are buying rehab, wholesale, vacant properties. I can write that in 48 contiguous states.
All right.
And so that's kind of a unique program that I developed, and that's really, I kind of created a niche for myself.
Very cool.
And do that. So actually it's been about 9 years ago maybe, I developed a program with a local Wisconsin agency or a carrier. I was the only agent in the entire state that was allowed to write this program. So I worked with their underwriting team and developed this program and set that up. And so even back then, I started creating a niche for myself that set myself apart from all the other agents. So it's pretty unique for an agent to have a unique insurance policy that they can write that no one else could.
Right.
And so I've just kind of built my name and reputation doing a lot of that. And so I write stuff all over the country.
Okay. So is the goal to expand C4, maintain where you're at, get other agents all over the country?
We want to keep growing. I mean, we just recently added another producer. Scott and I merged back in 2019, which was an awesome fit. We have some excellent office staff, and we're always looking for good people.
Mm-hmm.
We really don't need people with insurance background. We'll train the right people. I think just being an honest and personable and relatable person, that's really what makes just a good salesperson.
Fair.
I think you can be taught to sell products, right? Products are products.
Right.
And so I think if you're just relatable and you're easy to get along with, I think most people will do pretty well. But we're looking to grow.
For the testing, if you got somebody, whatever, how long is it? Is it just get online, pass the test in an hour, or is there some whole
you have to go through
6 months or something?
Yeah, we recommend an in-person class, or they do some online classes where it's, you know, maybe going to be a couple of weeks of classroom time. Then there's some studying with a pre-exam that you can practice on, and then you set up a state test and then go take the test with the state.
So a couple months?
I would say if you're pretty aggressive, you could do it in, 2 to 4 weeks if you were really pretty aggressive at it. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, away we go, man. This time went fast.
It did go fast, actually.
It goes super fast. Is there something that you wish I would have asked you?
Yeah, I guess I think the biggest, I think frustration from mm-hmm. an insurance agent's perspective is the online insurance stuff, right? I think people have commoditized, you know,
everything,
right? Yeah. And so buying stuff online, although the price may be good, make sure that the coverages fit your needs and that you understand what liability limits mean to you and your mm-hmm. family. You understand what the state laws are as it relates to, especially mm-hmm. auto insurance, mm-hmm. Both for personal and business. And just make sure that you're dealing with an agent that's asking the questions, really.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's about it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Is there a concern in the industry that insurance agents will go the way of travel agents?
No, I don't. No. I mean, it's funny because a lot of the online providers are coming to the independent agents as a resource because they found that we're more effective at selling and representing them, right? Because we're not selling purely based on price. There is no name your price gun.
Right.
You know, with us, like, we're going to tell you, hey, you know, maybe you don't want these coverages, and here's why. This is why we don't recommend these coverages.
All right.
You know, maybe this is $2 more a month. Or a lot of times, I just worked with a client the other day. We added significantly more coverage, improved not only their home and the auto, but their umbrella policy, and we were less than 50% of what they were currently paying.
Wow.
The savings was like $2,400 a year. So, again, it's working with the client to make sure that they understand proper coverages, getting them good coverages, and then working to find the best price that we can.
Gotcha.
So
cool.
It's a combination of all that.
I love it. Well, yeah. Jason, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks so much, James. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Good times.
All right.
This has been Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggle stories and triumphant successes of business owners across the land. We are underwritten locally by the Bank of Sun Prairie. If you're listening to this on the web, could you do me a huge favor? Give a thumbs up, subscribe, comment, and share it with all your business friends. My name is James Kademan, and Authentic Business Adventures is brought to you by Calls on Call, offering call answering and receptionist services for service businesses across the country on the web at callsoncall.com, as well as Draw-In Customers Business Coaching, offering business coaching services for entrepreneurs looking for growth on the web at drawincustomers.com. And of course, the Bold Business Book, a book for the entrepreneur and all of us, available wherever fine books are sold. We'd like to thank you, our wonderful viewers and listeners, as well as our guest, Jason Stendlin, owner of C4 Insurance. Jason, how can people find you?
Our website is C4INS.com.
Right.
Our phone number is 608-824-7267.
Awesome. That's C4, the letter C, the number four. INS.com. Awesome. Past episodes can be found morning, noon, and night. The podcast link found at drawincustomers.com. Thank you for watching. We'll see you next week. I want you to stay awesome. And if you do nothing else, enjoy your business.